I think that we're doing what we can in our small way. The problem is really quite widespread. And there's a lot of documentaries that are out there. It's really, really quite bad. Like I said, in Southeast Asia, you look at Indonesia and whatnot, their beach areas are completely littered with plastic. You think that it's isolated to that area of the globe, but the problem is that things move around and water currents and whatnot. Once the plastic hits the water, nature wants to get rid of it, dissolve it. That's just what it wants to do with everything. And the trouble is it doesn't know how to do that completely. So it'll do it partially and do a pretty good job of it, but not all the way. And those smaller particulates that end up not being digested by nature end up continuing to circle in the food chain and then get into the fish that eat them or birds that eat the fish. And then it all comes full circle back to us, and we end up ingesting the fish who ingested the plastic that is now in our bodies. So it's really to our benefit to understand the cycle of plastic pollution and how it will eventually come back and impact us, even though we feel like it shouldn't or wouldn't.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Carney, and I'm an outdoor and environmental writer and author of the book, Outdoor Minimalist, Wasteless Hiking, Camping, and Backpacking. The Outdoor Minimalist Podcast has the goal to give listeners actionable ways to waste less hiking, camping, backpacking, and more during every step of their process. Your impact outdoors starts long before you hit the trail and goes beyond leave no trace ethics. You'll learn how to identify sustainable outdoor brands, how to ask hard questions regarding sustainability, and begin to shift and evolve your mindset to integrate minimalism into all of your outdoor pursuits. In episode 126 of the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast, we get a detailed look at using recycled polyester as insulation. While polyester has a fair share of environmental problems, among other things, we explore if there are ways that we can use it sustainably, like removing ocean-bound plastics from the environment and making them into something new. To break down the ins and outs of developing a recycled insulation, I had the pleasure of hosting Joe DiGirolamo, the Director of Sales for North America for Thermor. Thermor manufactures better quality thermal insulation that has a reputation for performance and sustainability. Joe has been with the company for over 20 years, and he and his family are based in Western New York. He enjoys spending time outdoors and appreciates learning about and observing wildlife. Joe has an explorer mentality and has always enjoyed learning about new places and the people he meets along the way. So thank you for joining me on the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast today, Joe. I am interested to learn more about Thermor and their initiatives with recycled plastics and polyesters and all that jazz. But before we get to that, we'll dive in with a bit more background on you. So how did you first become interested in outdoor recreation, and how does it fit into your life now?
I think, Meg, it was, as it usually is, I think for most people, it starts with family. And my dad getting me into mostly fishing, and then my friends getting me into camping, you know, in my early teens, and realizing that I was very, very happy when I was outside, you know, and tapping into that feeling rather than getting stuck in the house. I seemed to just be at my best and happiest when I was just outdoors. And I didn't really mind what that was, you know, specifically. It could have been fishing or camping. It could have been just riding my bike. It could have been just walking. But I just like being outside.
And do you do most of those activities still today?
I do. You know, as you age, you kind of taper back a little bit on what you do. But I'm still, you know, I love walking and doing, you know, like shorter day hikes. We're not doing overnight camping anymore. Still fishing when you have time. And then I'm into competitive sports too, just to keep me active as well and keep me outdoors, such as tennis and, you know, middle-aged sports like pickleball and golfing and things like that. So, but I have fun with them. And the key, once again, is I feel good just, you know, in motion. I like being in motion outdoors.
Yeah, absolutely. Really anything outside is a good time. I recently tried pickleball like last year, I think, and it was surprisingly fun. Like I didn't know much about it, but it is really a really fun sport and like one that you can approach casually. Like it doesn't
You
take as much
can.
skill as something like tennis.
Yeah, tennis is definitely, there's a much longer learning curve on it. But pickleball is the fastest growing sport, hobby, et cetera, in the US right now. So it's really exploded.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a fun fact.
Yeah.
So, how does Furmore fit in with all of that? Did you know that you wanted to work in textiles and in that world? Is that something that you did for a long time? Or how did you end up in this role?
It was a friend of a friend that introduced me to a company in Rochester, New York at that time that was specialized in domestic wovens and coatings and laminates and whatnot. So that's sort of where I got my textile background from, and then had the opportunity to represent that company in the Pacific Northwest. So I moved out to the Seattle area and just started, representing that company in that territory. And then slowly started to add on other products as an independent agent. And Thermor was one of those products that I was representing. And from there, they offered me a full-time position to just represent them, and I accepted it. And that was in 2001, and I've been with them ever since.
And what is your role with them right now then?
Director of sales for the US and travel a fair amount to visit customers or to visit, our corporate office, which is in Milan, Italy. And then we also have production in the Far East because most outerwear is made abroad. So we do have a sales office in Hong Kong as well. So it's some trips to Europe, some trips to Asia, and then various domestic travel visiting customers in the US.
And for listeners that haven't heard of Thermor before, do you mind just explaining what exactly you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. We're the unseen item inside the garment that's really important, but maybe you don't give a lot of thought to. But Thermor is a very specialized manufacturer of synthetic thermal insulation. And they've been doing that since 1972. They're in a great environment in Milan for kind of spurring on innovation and creativity. So there's a lot of good stimulus there for the design team. And then once something we feel starts to be acceptable to the market and it works and it's tested, then we'll take that technology and we'll port it over to our Far East facility where it becomes more of a practical type of manufacturing and availability thing. Family-owned business, I'd say we're medium-sized. I feel like we're very nimble, which I think is an advantage these days that we're able to. There's not a lot of layers. We're not like a typical, corporate America pyramid where you have to go through layers and layers of people to get something done. It's just a conversation between myself and the owner of the company, and things can really happen quickly if we want them to, which is a great feeling.
Yeah, that is one nice thing about smaller companies that it seems like it's easier to like make changes or kind of like shift gears and stuff like that. I know today we're going to be talking a lot about recycled plastics and specifically ocean-bound plastics. But before we get into that specific area, can you talk a little bit about like Thermor's history making synthetic insulations and then like how and why they transitioned into recycled options.
I think that during the 1970s, there was a need for just something different than down, maybe something less bulky as well. Down is a great insulator, but it's also very warm and it can be costly as well. So maybe something that was more versatile in terms of being a thinner profile, being able to work with a wider range of circumstances in the outdoors, whether it be a damp environment or cool to moderate temperatures instead of deep cold, or for active people who are on the go and achieving good breathability. And I think it was just born out of a need. And from there, those 100% virgin polyester products started to transition in the 80s to a little bit of recycled technology. But the processing at that time for recycled fibers wasn't so great. So if I gave you two swatches of a non-recycled product versus a recycled product, it would be very obvious. which one was recycled. And since then, there's always an evolution in everything. And Thermor started to take advantage of the better fiber technology that was out there in the early 2000s. And then, of course, we also started to become better at processing those fibers and how to get the most out of them. And the whole recycled family of products started to evolve from that point in a more serious way. 50% initially recycled content, and then up to 75% a few years later, and then eventually to 100% in around 2013-14.
Yeah, so are all of your insulations now made from 100% recycled materials?
There are a few that are not recycled, or they have partial recycled content, mostly due to the fact that they may have like a very specialized function, whether it's a stretch insulation or maybe something that offers adaptive warmth. So those items may not be 100% recycled because of that.
That makes sense. Adventuring plans on your calendar? Remember to grab your Lava Linens travel towel on your way out the door. Founded by a mother-daughter team, Lava Linens crafts durable, luxurious travel towels as a more sustainable and better performing alternative to microfiber and cotton towels. Powered by flax, hemp, and tencel, they're designed to be by your side for years to come. Use the code OUTDOORMINIMALIST for 15% off your next order. Okay, so if we're focusing mostly on the recycled products, then let's talk a little bit about ocean-bound plastics. And so, like, what does it mean when a company says that this material is made from ocean-bound plastics?
That's a great question. The differentiator for ocean-bound plastic is where it's collected. We work with Ocean Cycle, which is a certification company that helps monitor the traceability of plastic bottles that are collected within 30 miles of the shoreline so that we could try to avert a problem with the plastic going into the water earlier in the process, because once it gets to the water, it's too late. Especially salt water changes the structure of the plastic bottles to the point where you can't even utilize them in the way that we would need to for our product. So you're trying to head it off at the pass, so to speak, and be proactive with that collection of bottles before it ever has a chance to really do harm.
Okay, so then how does the ocean-bound plastic recycling differ from your other recycled products? Is it just in the sourcing, or is the processing also different?
It's really in the sourcing and the geography, and just having those collection points close to a water source, whereas our regular recycled products, if you will, could really come from a plastic supply that could be anywhere, inland and et cetera.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there a specific motivator that like pushed Thermor as a company to implement the use of ocean-bound plastics?
You know, sometimes Thermor just does things because they feel that they can. There wasn't anything stopping us from doing it. We had to do a little homework and we had to talk with Ocean Cycle and make sure that we had access to the right type of plastic and the right quantities so that this could just be an ongoing program for us that we could use year after year. And I think that it was something that we felt could be useful and maybe bring attention to a problem that is really spiraling out of control right now, especially in Southeast Asia. It's quite profound how terrible the situation is. And if we're able to at least bring a little bit of light to that, I think that that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you want to maybe touch on the scope of the issue? I think a lot of the listeners are aware that, you know, plastic pollution is bad, like the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, all those types of things. But if you want to touch on like the scope of the pollution and also like why this could be part of the solution.
I think that we're doing what we can in our small way. The problem is really quite widespread. And there's a lot of documentaries that are out there. It's really, really quite bad. Like I said, in Southeast Asia, if you look at Indonesia and whatnot, their beach areas are completely littered with plastic. Plastic is showing up. You think that it's isolated to that area of the globe, but the problem is that things move around and water currents and whatnot, once the plastic hits the water, nature wants to get rid of it, dissolve it. That's just what it wants to do with everything. And the trouble is it doesn't know how to do that completely. So it'll do it partially and do a pretty good job of it, but not all the way. And those smaller particulates that end up not being digested by nature end up continuing to circle in the food chain and then get into the fish that eat them or birds that eat the fish. And then it all comes full circle back to us, and we end up ingesting the fish who ingested the plastic that is now in our bodies. So it's really to our benefit to understand the cycle of plastic pollution and how it will eventually come back and impact us, even though we feel like it shouldn't or wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Returning back to, that was a little bit of an aside, but I'm glad that we touched on that specific piece of the issue.
Yeah.
And so when you are, or when Thermor is like processing these plastics or turning the plastics into rPET, rPET, or the EcoDown, as you call, mm-hmm. how does that work? Like, how do you take a plastic bottle that you collected and then turn it into an insulation?
The plastic bottles are collected at collection points, and then there's different types of plastic that can be collected. Not every type of plastic is suitable for making insulation. So we need something that's really quite refined, and a typical plastic water bottle is probably the best thing that has a very pure level of rPET in it or PET in it. And then from there, from the collection point, it heads to a factory that will mechanically shred the product and turn it into another form, which would be a pellet, so that it can be usable again. And from there, the pellet is sent over to another factory that will extrude it into a fiber that we're able to actually utilize in our products.
Okay. And then I know one question that a lot of listeners would have regarding like an rPET used in this way, especially in textiles, is like, is that the end of its life then? Is that the end of that plastic's life? Or can it then be recycled again in the afterlife of that insulation?
This is something that is being discussed a lot right now, is trying to step into this circularity type of concept where maybe something that has been recycled once can be recycled again, and perhaps even again. Right now, I think that there's a lot of experimentation going on with that and to see whether that's really a viable option to recycle it again and possibly again. And I don't know how to honestly answer that, because right now there are a lot of companies that are trying to do that, but I don't know whether the success level has been very high.
Yeah, it's more needs to go into like the development of those processes, I think, and figuring out how we can make things more circular across the board in textiles. So it'll be interesting how that develops as more like experimentation is done. And hopefully in the next few years, we can get a little more innovation in that space.
Yeah. I think you said it perfectly, and probably another part of it is not just the process itself, but also the logistics of it, and where are these key collection points, and how do you get the garment to that point, and how do you separate certain components off of something and then utilize it in the right way? So, I mean, it could be very, very sophisticated when you think about how many components go into making a garment. So I think it's certainly trending that way, but the logistics and practical side of it have to fall in place too, so that you can even get to the process of recycling it again in the first place.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up, because there are a lot of complexities to like developing that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Another thing that comes up a lot, especially when we talk about textiles on this show, is like the shedding of the microfibers or the microplastics. And so one thing that will often turn people away from using synthetic fibers or synthetic insulations is the fact, well, it's made from petrol materials and it could shed microplastics. So how is Thermor addressing those aspects of using synthetic materials?
This issue came to light a few years back when it was discovered that washing mostly your micro fleece items and related items like that and your washing machine were not such a good thing, because anything that's less than one denier is considered a microfiber. And the trouble is that the filtration system on, say, a washing machine was not really calibrated to capture something so small. So these fibers were able to leak out inadvertently. No one really knew about it or understood it at the time. It was perfectly innocent, but it was happening. And these microfibers would get through and into the water, and then they'd find themselves again later on further in the process. And they collect to one another and sort of create a plastic garbage ball, if you will. But since then, I think the companies are starting to become more aware of this problem. And what Thermor's done is to eliminate any type of micro denier products or fibers from our product so that we really just stay away from it. It sounds very technical to say we use a microfiber in our products, but it's really not such a great thing right now. And all the products we've developed in the last two and a half years have all been void of micro deniers because of this issue.
Yeah. And would you be able to explain the difference between a microfiber and a microplastic then? Because I think sometimes they're used almost interchangeably in like some capacities, and that might be confusing as a distinction to some folks.
This is an area where the initial focus for us was on micro denier, which is just the diameter of the fiber that's being used in the product. The microplastic shedding is a different type of issue, and it's something that we're studying right now in reference to our product. Because we're contained within the garment, it's something that we didn't look at as aggressively, but we're starting to do the research now and trying to figure out how many, basically, parts per million of our product could potentially shed after washing. And we don't have the exact figures at the time of our interview right now, but it's something that I think I will have for you probably in the next 3 to 4 weeks and be able to give you a full report that maybe you can incorporate into this podcast to show how different items shed at different levels and where we would fall into that as well.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see.
Sure.
So the shedding of microplastics, I guess, could be one of the downsides of using synthetic insulation or even rPET insulation, recycled insulation. But what are some of the pros? So are there any reasons why you may choose to use a synthetic insulation over the more traditional and natural down insulation?
I think that for synthetic products, I think Thermor is probably viewed as more of a product that could be utilized over a wider range of weather conditions. And there's a thermal story there, but there's also a comfort story. So I think it performs better under damp conditions, for example, and still retains a good level of warmth. It's non-allergenic, which is probably beneficial to a lot of people. Down is a great insulator, but there's also different qualities of down. When you think of down, you automatically think of high quality down, but there's also other levels of down that are not nearly as warm. When you're talking about a good quality duck or goose down from a northern climate, there's no doubt that it's an excellent insulator, especially for dry, cool conditions, and especially sedentary conditions. But if you're active and you need good breathability, and you might be subject to fluctuations in temperature and perhaps damp conditions, then I think that a synthetic will trump a down type product.
Yeah, I have noticed that when using synthetic insulation, I usually opt for synthetic insulation in things like sleeping bags and jackets, primarily because of the use function. And going into like wet areas, it can be like a safety function to ensure that it will still continue to insulate. And also for any listeners that might be vegan, I think that that is also like a common distinction that they'll make. They'll always opt for the synthetic insulation over the down because of ethics.
Yeah, there's certainly a performance side to that choice. And then there's also an ethical side to that choice, and perhaps even a comfort side to the choice too. I mean, we're all wired differently, and some people overheat more easily. Sometimes down is not the right insulator for the situation, and actually might be too warm.
Yeah, it is. It is very warm. It's very good at what it does.
Yeah, for sure.
So, what are some other things other than like those aspects that you mentioned about like the benefits of using a synthetic insulation? What are some things that consumers should consider if they are going to buy textiles specifically made from rPET or recycled materials?
I guess it would be to read labels carefully in the first place and make sure that there is some recycled content. The plastic problem is that's very widespread. It's not just ocean-bound plastics, it's plastics everywhere and on every continent, whether it's inland or coastal. So if you can purchase something that's made with rPET, then that's a good start. And everyone does a pretty good job of traceability with that. It's getting better and better so that you know that it is indeed made with recycled content. And, I think just personal choices as well, in terms of how you do things is something that everyone should consider as well.
Yeah, so when we're reading labels, I know that oftentimes it will list the, I want to say ingredients, but materials. It'll list the materials of the product.
Sure, content.
Yeah, so what specific factors should people look at? So I know that it would be possible. I've seen some labels that will list it as, I'm trying to think of the exact verbiage. So like up to 60% recycled materials, or how do you read through some of those like specific distinctions, slash what should you look for to ensure that you're actually getting a recycled product?
Well, part of this is the labeling from US Customs. And right now, it's possible to label a garment as 100% polyester fibers for the insulation, as an example. It's not necessary to actually note the recycled polyester fibers in that product description. So I hope that that would be one step, that content label. There will be some pressure to actually let the consumer know that theirs is a recycled polyester rather than just regular polyester, because the way that customs looks at it is it's still a base polyester product, even if it was recycled. So I think that that has to evolve a little bit, and I think that it will because the consumer awareness is starting to grow.
Yeah, I think it's something that more consumers are looking for and like looking to for companies to contain that. So, are there regulations around the labeling of it then, or not really?
Not so much. It's really the brand that will want to call out the fact that it is a recycled content, but they wouldn't have to if they don't want to. But I think most companies do want to let their customers know there is recycled content in this garment, and we're going to call it out and let you know about it. And if you take it a step further, we can also prove the traceability and show you where the product came from, et cetera. So.
Yeah, we love transparency.
Yeah, that helps a lot these days too. We all try to be as ethical as possible and as honest as possible in representing what we do. But of course, there's always a few, I guess, that, try to get away with something. So,
Always.
yeah.
PFAS are known as forever chemicals because so many of them have been found to last essentially on geologic time. They don't break down naturally in the environment.
You have two main sources. From production, you have point sources. You have emissions from industrial chemicals, surfactants, like emulsifiers in fluoropolymer production. So quite big volumes. We're talking about thousands of tons every year into water currents. And since they don't fully degrade, they don't mineralize. They only go, the concentrate, the background level, we call them, is increasing slowly over time. And eventually, this water becomes drinking water, sooner or later. And there we are.
What we find is that in the food chain, these molecules that go into organisms and lodge into the fat or oils in their cells or in their tissues and stay there because they aggregate, these longer chain ones tend to stay in the fat and not want to get into urine and be excreted from the bodies. And so what you find is up the food chain, they accumulate, they bioaccumulate. They've even seen whales and polar bears with PFAS in their bodies as a result of this bioaccumulation and the fact that they're very resistant to degradation.
Well, what I can say as a physician is that these chemicals can enter the body and that some of them can stay there for many, many years. You will, over time, accumulating more and more in your body if the exposure continues. And therefore, we're concerned about the long-term adverse health effects.
So we need action to not only clean up and mitigate our exposure to PFAS that are out there in the environment, but we need to cut it off at the tap. We need to cut it off at the source. And that's why we need leadership from government leaders. And that's why we also need leadership from the business community to take action on this urgent environmental and public health crisis that is impacting people all across the United States and all across the world.
Join us on March 4th, 2024, in the 10-part podcast series, Forever Chemicals, as we explore the rise, scientific cover-ups, pollution, and now regulations of the class of chemicals known as PFAS. Forever Chemicals is an independent podcast series produced by Blackfooted Ferret Productions. As an independent podcast, our goal is to provide free and accessible, unbiased information for all. If you'd like to support our mission, head to our show notes and donate to our GoFundMe. Well, awesome. It's cool to see the Thermore initiatives, and then I'm looking forward to seeing how you guys end up addressing microplastics down the line this year. Do you have anything else specific that you would like to add in regards to any of your initiatives or the use of recycled materials?
I think all of us kind of go on a journey of what we thought was very interesting and cool maybe 15 or 20 years ago, maybe a different place for you now. So I guess just challenge yourself to really look at, do I need to have this single-use plastic item of any type? You know, whether it's a plastic water bottle, whether it's a fork and a spoon, a straw, whatever it is. And challenge that paradigm of how you've always done things. And, you know, I found myself washing and rinsing out a Ziploc bag the other night because, you know, if you were stranded on a desert island and someone only gave you one bag, then you would probably make sure that you really used it and reused it and took care of it for a long time because it actually does have longevity, you know, so it'd be, you know, silly to throw something like that out if it can be reused and take on that minimalist, you know, type of attitude about something as simple as that. And sometimes I think you might be surprised at crossing over into something else and breaking that paradigm. Like, for example, we have our first electric vehicle in the family in the past few months. And I didn't really know what to expect, but went in sort of open-minded about the purchase and the exploration of it and researching it. And then ended up finding out that it's a heck of a lot of fun to drive. And it's efficient, and it's economical, and it's earth-friendly. But it's also fun. And I didn't expect that. I thought there was going to be something that you would have to give up. And sometimes you find that you cross over into this other area and you didn't have to give up anything at all. In fact, I felt like we gained, which is a nice thing.
Yeah, I love that. That's a good mindset shift or like a reframing of certain things. So yeah, awesome.
Yeah,
I'm glad that you had a chance to come and sit down and chat about this. I always am interested in learning about recycled materials and recycled textiles specifically. I think it is something we're going to start seeing more of. And it's just kind of cool to hear about kind of like the development and how it actually happens. So how can listeners learn more about you and Thermore?
I would suggest visiting our website to get firsthand knowledge about our product line and what we do and how we do it. And then all the social media points as well, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, they can learn more about our product there. And anyone who has the opportunity to attend some of the industry trade shows that we're participate in many of them, and they're always welcome to visit Thermore's booth and come and chat with us personally.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Joe. And I'll be sure to include the links to all that in the show notes so people can find it easily. But yeah, thanks again.
No, thank you, Meg. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. And if you like what you hear, let me know. Leave a review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Instagram at outdoor.minimalist.book, on YouTube, or subscribe to our weekly newsletter at theoutdoorminimalist.com. For even more updates, other educational resources, and to help build an outdoor community with the shared goal to create a better outdoor space as we recreate.